Alrighty.
This is Deanna Spingola. It is Tuesday, September 11th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Andrew Johnson, the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. Well, so this is a very interesting day. I think that probably all of us can remember what we were doing when perhaps somebody called us on the phone and said, "Are you watching this?" And that's what one of my relatives said to me, "Are you watching this?" And I never turned on the TV in the morning, and I turned it on and I couldn't believe what was going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was a sort of similar experience for me. I think as I recall, my wife came home and said, "Oh, you know, my mum's just said that there's something about some planes crashing in, you know, in the America or something, some hijackings." And so at that point, I switched on the television. Actually, I'm not even sure if it was a TV. I think I had a TV card on my computer, so I was actually watching it on my computer with a TV, you know, card in it. And that's when I saw these horrible things happening. And I can't remember exactly at which point I switched on, but it was, you know, probably I think after the supposed second plane, you know, had come in. So yeah, I was right here at home and, you know, just working on things as much as I've been today, really, I suppose.
Right. And yeah, things changed drastically after that. And of course, I did a program on my regular RBN program and talked about some of the things that PNAC, Project for a New American Century, had proposed as early as 1998. They created themselves in 1997. And this was basically their new Pearl Harbor, the one that they said, you know, if we don't have some catastrophic event like a new Pearl Harbor, we're not going to be able to make these changes that we'd like to make. And pretty soon you have a new Pearl Harbor.
Well, that's, you know, that's one way of characterizing it, of course. And I've read the relevant parts of that PNAC document as well, and it is, you know, it does make you wonder what was actually, you know, what was actually being planned and who knew what at that stage, you know. And you get these questions, you know, what did they know and when did they know it, sort of thing, which you need to be asked and have probably never really been properly asked except by people like us. You know, and I think the, you know, the other thing which we touched on there in just our opening comments is that we both probably saw this unfolding on television. I mean, neither of us were, you know, eyewitnesses to the events, and so the power of TV was brought to bear very, very quickly on this. You know, and I didn't really sort of wake up from the TV hypnotism until you know, sort of 2004, really. It was that sort of time when I was starting to revisit the whole thing and try and pick it apart a bit more. I don't know what your experience was of working out what happened and, you know, what all the lies that had been told. You know, what was your experience with that?
Oh, I believed it. I really believed what I was seeing, and I had no reason to question it, even though I had, you know, I knew that there had been false flags in the past and whatnot, but I really had no reason to question it. But then you know, after a while, you just start investigating and figuring things out and reading and recognize that you were duped, and that was just a psyop. And that is the very, very best way of hypnotizing an entire nation is to get everything on TV and get everybody traumatized, because when you're traumatized, you're going to believe everything that you hear.
Well, that's one of the key things that I think you learn about the psychology that was at work. And, you know, you can see from the news broadcast, I think, when I listened to Morgan Reynolds' presentation about the lack of planes and lack of debris at the World Trade Center, you know, he kind of almost made a joke out of it in that he played this clip from Fox News, you know, and I think it was 45 seconds after they'd shown this shot of this supposed plane going into the tower, the second one, they were say they're already mentioning Osama bin Laden as being the culprit, you know.
Right, within seconds of the thing happening.
And again, I never even questioned this. I didn't even think, well, how could they know? You know, how could they possibly make such a statement? And so when you inject into into the traumatized mind, you inject story, that's the one that sticks and becomes the truth. And it's actually a very simple psychological process when you see it in operation. And you know about all the mind control that they do on people, that they did all these experiments on the prisoners of war, you know, the Nazis, and they would obviously traumatize them, and then they could make them do what they want. And people have read about such things, but they don't apply that to what happened on 9/11, that there was this mass traumatization of virtually the whole of the population of the Western world, anyone who'd had a TV or a radio or had seen the papers or whatever. And I think even those that didn't, they were then, you know, they had that story given to them by everyone else. So the majority of them were taken in by it as well. And it was a very, very tiny minority of people that were already, you know, in a situation where they would question what they were shown and understand that it was not what it was being shown to be. You know, and I was also one of the people who had no idea that this was going to be a total psychological operation, you know.
Right. Well, because we were all tuned into our televisions, everybody in the country, there wasn't anything else going on. No planes were flying, and scientists and people who are working in the propaganda industry understand that television is something that you can use as a vehicle because people are really in a stupor. They don't interact with the television. They don't. It's even better than radio, because with radio, at least you're not glued. They don't have all of your senses. You know, you're using your ears to hear the radio. But in TV, your eyes are there, your ears, and you're really these patterns, the monotonous patterns that the TV produces, and the frequency. There's low-level frequencies, and they use unperceived waves, and so we kind of get into this stupor, and so we're going to accept whatever we are told, and it's what they did, because that was the only thing that was going on. Our TV sets were all on, and everybody sat there extra attentive and traumatized. And we were all indoctrinated.
That's right, and also I think the way that television has come to work in terms of the presentation of things, like for example, you know, this sort of ticker tape that you have at the bottom of the screen, and you know, you quite quickly you can be hypnotized by that and think what's going to come up next, you know, and you're kind of sucked into that whole way that it's presented as well. So it is a form of hypnosis without people realizing it, because they think it's just harmless TV, and they just don't have any. You know, regardless of any other sort of even more nefarious things, like you mentioned. I mean, you know, my own personal jury is out on that one, whether they are using some kind of wave motion within the signal to you know, put extra information. I think that's certainly possible, but I'm not sure whether they're actually doing it. I think they might be doing it a different way. But nevertheless, I still think, you know, this idea of the 50 hertz and the 60 hertz picture refresh is also something which people have picked up on, that this is one. I think the 60 hertz particularly, which is what's used in the USA, is meant to have some resonance with a natural human cycle, you know, one of the natural sort of human cycles of doing things. So you know, there's those things to consider as well in terms of how things are presented on television. But you know, as you and I have spoken before, and I think I'd like perhaps just to mention one of the recent things that I've posted on my website, because I think it ties into this idea of people being hypnotized, being led in a certain direction without them necessarily realizing it. And I think, you know, as you mentioned my book 9/11 Finding the Truth, and what that is about really is my journey in coming to the new understanding that I now have of the events of that day, of which I had no knowledge initially, and that was really, the big wake-up call for me came at the end of 2006, early 2007, when I came into contact with Dr. Judy Wood, who's written this forensic textbook about the destruction of the towers. Where did the towers go? And we've talked about that quite a lot on your program, and I know, so people can go and check that out for themselves. And when I came into contact with Dr. Judy Wood, and I realized what she was saying, it was like she was kind of anti-hypnosis, as it were. She undid a lot of how, the things that had been used to hypnotize me. And she was able to show me some basic observations, which I could clearly see were true. And then that undid a lot of this hypnosis that I'd had previously. And that became kind of a running theme through this book that I wrote, that how people were being led in certain directions by certain groups and individuals to keep them from rediscovering what actually happened on 9/11. And this process has been going, on since, or since the event itself, I think.
Right, and they do other things to bring our attention back to that. For instance, when the Iman, the Iman in New York, Rauf, Rauf, was behind the this Park 51, where they were going to build this huge center, a Muslim center, and then. It made every then there were lawsuits and everything, and it reminded everybody again, and this has been a couple of years ago, it reminded everybody again about, oh, but the Muslims did 9/11. We can't have them doing a community center, building this big, huge $100 million community center so close to Ground Zero. And so then the population remembered, and I think Pat Robertson did a lawsuit, and the media was just all over this. And basically, this guy that was going to build the center or behind the was promoting it was actually funded by the same foundations that fund the people who fund PNAC.
And I mean, also, I heard recently, I don't know whether you'd heard about this, but apparently there's been graffiti written on these monuments, at the World Trade Center site, or somebody's been putting stuff in the water. I hesitate what to say, but apparently some not very pleasant things. And I do wonder if this is again just another psychological operation for people to sort of, it's very easy for somebody to go and do something like that, and then for people to get distracted away from re-examining what actually happened and get caught up in the emotional reaction to that. And of course,
Sure.
there is, we can't stop the emotional reaction, nor should we. But I think that looking at 9/11 is, it's almost like a spiritual challenge in a sense, in that can you suspend your emotional reaction to it and perform a rational analysis? And I think this is another thing that Dr. Judy Wood herself confronted, particularly in relation to these people that jumped out of the towers. And I can't remember if she's spoken about this on your program, but I know she's spoken about it on others, that she couldn't really initially think about these people that jumped out when she started to investigate that part of those parts of what happened. And then she felt like they were sort of giving her a message almost. I can't remember the exact way that she put it, and she felt she needed to look into this and tell their story of what happened to them, so that people would know what terrible things were done. But she does it in an analytical way, in a dispassionate way, in terms of we need to know what was done so that we can understand and tell people about it so that it doesn't happen again. And
Right.
this is obviously what I'm, part of my objective is to try and you know, we've described it that Dr. Judy Wood has reverse engineered what happened to the World Trade Center buildings, and I've tried to my humble efforts basically are to try and reverse engineer some of the psychology that's been employed to stop people from uncovering what actually happened. And again, we've seen another instance of that, I think, quite recently, which I'll talk about perhaps for a few minutes, if I may.
Oh, please. I know what you're going to talk about too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't so much what we spoke about earlier today. It's another thing as well. I can talk
Oh,
about that as well.
okay.
But what has actually happened recently is another new 9/11 initiative has started in the last about last month or so. I think it was originally sort of appeared in about June, but it just seems to have got going in the last sort of month or so. And there's a new website that started called 911crashtest.org. Obviously, people that are listening to this can go and check this out for themselves and form their own view of it. And I hope they do that because, my misgivings about it could be incorrect, But basically, this the chap that's behind this is a chap called Steve Diak, spelt D-E apostrophe A-K or Dayak. I'm not quite sure. I can't quite remember how to pronounce it. But he initially posted a YouTube video about, I think it was about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and we're on the anniversary date now, 11th of September 2012. And the video is entitled "Tired of War Without End." So that, in a sense, is not necessarily a bad title in one sense, because people are just put off by 9/11, maybe drawn to look at it. And and he talks about how the 9/11 events were the start of the war on terror. I mean, he might not use that phrase, but he talks about the puts up pictures of Guantanamo Bay inmates and this sort of thing. And it's a good presentation. And you are drawn in. There's like pauses in the speech. You can see that it's been carefully edited to give it a kind of professional or semi-professional feeling. It's better than a video I could produce on my own sort of thing, because I haven't got any professional experience in video production. All my skills are self-taught and so on. So he goes through that the wars thing. And then he introduces the idea of the plane crashes at the World Trade Center, especially, and those are the ones that he focuses on. And he talks about Newton's third law, which sort of caught my attention because not many people will talk about Newton's third law in relation to the plane crashes at the World Trade Center. And Newton's third law is that to every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. In other words, when you consider this problem of the plane striking the building, then what that means is that the force on the plane is the same as the force on the building, and vice versa. So basically, what that means at the end of it all is that the plane should have essentially bounced off the building, or mainly most of it should have bounced off and fallen into the street. And that didn't happen. What we were
Yes.
shown was that the plane appeared to sort of cut through many of the girders and get absorbed into the building. And there were very few, in fact, there were no large pieces that you could see like hanging out of this crack. No bits of tail,
Yeah,
no bits
it
of
just
windstrip.
dissolved.
Yeah, correct. And many people have observed this and expressed it in different ways. But it was Dr. Morgan Reynolds that actually started this court case, which challenged the official reports that were produced by NIST. It challenged the contractors actually, and that was done in 2007. And that's kind of all, I hesitate to say ancient history, but not many people talk about it, except me and occasionally Dr. Wood. So anyway, this Steve Diak video, he didn't mention the court case, but he does mention the same problem, and he mentions Newton's third law and how this plane got absorbed into the building and so on. And then what he goes on to propose in the video is that this is a good way of this what I this isolating these things which I just mentioned, the lack of plane falling down and the lack of abeyance of Newton's third law. It's a good way to disprove the official story of 9/11. And you think, yes, it is a good way. And so what he then goes on to propose is a crash test, and he cites the example of a website of a program called MythBusters, which I'm sure many people will be familiar with. And he then shows an example where they used a rocket sled to slice through a car for part of the MythBusters program. I'm not sure what they were trying to MythBust at that time. But what he then proposes from this is that this rocket sled is, you know, it's a company that owns this. You can hire this rocket sled for a particular crash test of your own, you know, or a particular type of test, impact test or whatever, maybe for large trucks or, you know, building reinforcements or something. I guess they hire this out for this. So he's proposing that people get together, fund this crash test. And what they do is they you know, get an old scrap Boeing plane from somewhere and take off the wing, you know, mount it on this rocket sled, and then they build a segment of the, you know, the World Trade Center girders, and then they fire the rocket sled, or rather run the rocket sled at 500 miles an hour, or whatever the official speed was meant to have been, and crash this wing and see if it cuts through the steel girders. And, you know, and it, of course, if it cuts through the steel girders, then Newton was wrong. And if it doesn't cut through the steel girders, then the official story is false. So, you know, you look at that right there. You know, what's your reaction to that, for example, before I go and say what my reaction is?
Well, as I had studied previous plane crashes, in fact, there was one, wasn't there one that crashed into the Empire State Building?
That's right, in 1945.
Right, and it didn't go all the way into the building. And I thought, oh, this is crazy. And then, of course, you also have the orchestrated opposition, where if you bring up no planes, or if you question the official version, there's always a group of people somewhere. They're going to say, oh, that's a plane hugger. That's, you know, I mean, they have all kinds of characteristics and all kinds of names and labels that they attach to people who ask questions.
Right, and I think that's true. And you know, the point you made there about the previous plane crashes, and that I think it was a B-25 bomber that crashed into the Empire State, I think in 1944 or 45 or something, in fog. And you know, there are pictures of what happened from that, and there are also, you know, basically, this sounds like a good idea. This crash test initiative. It does sound like it may have some mileage in it, but quite quickly you realise that the official story, you know, when you look at it, has been disproved over and over and over again. And particularly, again, if we go back to Dr. Judy Wood's book, she has many, many examples of where the official story is completely impossible for so many reasons. And you know, somebody actually wrote to me about this video. I posted this video initially not having, you know, gone into it in a lot of depth. I got some reaction back when I posted this out to people saying, hang on a minute, Andrew, you know, what about this? What about, you know, what about some of the comments that this guy is making here? And they drew my attention to some of the YouTube comments and comments on the website that Steve Diak has made, which I'll get to in a couple of minutes. But the other thing is that, as I say, we can already disprove the official story. So to go to the trouble of building a reproduction of an experiment, what's that going to achieve? Because what can then be done is any naysayers, they will simply say, well, did you actually use 30-year-old steel? You know, in other words, they construct this thing.
Sure. They're always going to find some parameter that you didn't follow or something to disprove what you are trying to prove. So that, I don't think that would be very effective.
That's right. And, you know, and you could say, well, this isn't 700 feet and above it. This isn't 700 feet in the air, you know, or it's, you did it on a rainy day and not on a sunny day, or the other way around,
sure.
You know, something. As you say, so they'll find some particular thing which is not identical to say, well, this is not a controlled test. So I think really that is somewhat being overlooked. But I think what became more interesting again, and I've spoken about this with you before, this sort of thing, it's like the Architects and Engineers Group, where they're, if you go and look at their website and you read their messages and so on, saying, oh, we're trying to get a new investigation into 9/11 and this, that, and the rest of it, it looks good on the surface. And you think, well, these guys really are trying to get to the truth. But then there are certain things which, when you ask them or point out to them, well, okay, well, the building's turned to dust, so what have you got to say about that? And they'll say, well, that was thermite or it was explosives. And you say, well, explosives don't do that. And they say, well, we know that it was explosives, so don't talk about the fact that it turned to dust because it's really not that important. And they'll try and brush it aside. And then you'll get them posting articles. For example, they've got an article all about Dr. Judy Wood's research, and they'll make false claims about it. Like they'll claim that the only piece of evidence that Dr. Judy Wood talks about is this central set of core columns, the spire, and so on. And that, of course, is untrue. She doesn't just talk about that. Admittedly, that's one of the easiest things to see and explain. But again, if you look at her website, the videos, and so on, there are many things which are included that she talks about. So, in other words, you get these fake opposition groups like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth themselves making false claims, making statements which are clearly untrue, simple, basic statements. And on this 9/11 crash test website and the comments that have been made, we've seen exactly the same thing happening again. In other words, the guy, on the one hand, and this, I mean, I was amazed because what happened with this new thing, this new crash test site, when it was posted, I had one particular guy that wrote to me. He's based in the UK, and I was amazed because he'd just taken this whole thing apart in about 10 minutes. He'd taken the whole thing apart, and he'd looked at the comments that had been made by Steve Diak, and and he'd written things like, oh, I disagree. It was my idea, so please stop making this a Judy Wood book tour. She is vehemently against the project. And that's what he posted on the YouTube video. And he says she is vehemently against the project. And this is totally untrue.
That
What she...
is ridiculous.
Yeah,
People have
because.
always, they always try to say what they say she said. I mean, they've given her phrases that she's never even used, for Star Wars and beams from
Well, they.
space, and
That's right. Ray beams from space and space beams. Those are two main ones. I mean, I mean, we have to straighten out some of the confusion with that because she had this original series called the Star Wars Directed Energy Weapon, and the point was with that was just to dwell on that for a few seconds. As we know that the colloquial name for the SDI program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, was the Star Wars program under Reagan, and she at that time considered that whatever she was witnessing was some type of weapon system, which may possibly, have been developed as part of that program as a, an undisclosed project or, whatever, an offshoot, a sort of corrupted offshoot of it or something. That was her sort of best guess, and that's why she gave it that title. And actually, it was somebody else that gave her that title. I know the chap, and I think he was just, again, giving it, trying to give it some kind of background, So, yeah, but you're absolutely right that all these terms have been bandied about and applied and said. And another thing that we've talked about recently, Dr. Wood and I, is how we've got this Jim Fetzer character, and he's basically been posting various remarks in the last few months about the book, and then we've had other people have actually come on to these various forums on Veterans Today and on the Amazon comments to actually take Fetzer to task over what he's saying. And then what Fetzer does with that is he then says that Judy Wood is attacking him and it's all about infighting. And of course, this is untrue because Dr. Judy Wood isn't making these remarks. What Fetzer is, getting is that they're actually exposing him and they're telling him, they're actually clearly describing what he's doing. And they're not, of course, some of them are making sort of negative remarks about him, but that's not coming from Dr. Judy Wood. So, in other words, he's creating this infighting himself, and she's not even partaking in this. These people are actually using their own form of expression, which obviously Dr. Wood has no control over. And so what Fetzer does is he then creates the appearance on the internet of controversy, and that these people are attacking him and he's the good guy. But and until people actually start to pick apart what he's doing, you know, this is, you're not going to understand the psychology of it, and you're not going to understand what the end result is. So and I think this is what very rapidly, within a week or two, this is what this new 9/11 crash test has turned into. Because this chap that wrote this email to me, which I've turned into an article, and I put at the top of this article, I've just posted it today on checktheevidence.com, I've put "based heavily on comments sent to me by an astute reader observer," and I asked him if he wanted to be credited, and at the minute he says no, he's happy just to have it as it is for the moment. So you know, I don't want to take credit for this, I've just done a bit of editing. But what he said was, this Steve Diak has posted on his website, we wondered who he was basically, and he says, "For many years I was incognito, but I realized a while back that the only people I have a beef with have known who I am and where I live for quite some time, so no harm done. As far as I'm concerned, it's safer in daylight." But he doesn't give any other, you know, he doesn't say what his background is, whether he's got an engineering background or a commercial background. But very, you know, a bit mysterious, bit of a mystery there. And then he says in another comment, I'm reading this out of order, but it doesn't really matter, "I am well aware of Judy Wood, and despite the fact I disagree with much of her work, she's more than welcome to partake in this project. We don't need to agree on anything beyond the test." So he doesn't say what he disagrees with. And then later he sort of clarifies a little bit, because somebody points out to him how comprehensive Dr. Wood's research is, and you know, essentially proves the sort of thing that was used. I mean, that's what it does. It proves the sort of thing that was used. We don't know the exact thing, but we do know it has certain characteristics, and we've spoken about that at length. So somebody went onto his YouTube channel, and you know, they posted a remark to that effect, and he comes back with, "Such certitude, the lack of debris and dust can be explained without relying on top secret weapons that cannot be verified. If you have a genuine interest in the learning the truth, you can continue researching beyond Judy Wood." What's the implication of that? Where does he think beyond Judy Wood goes to? What is,
Yes.
you know, the next thing? Look, tell us, you know, if you know, please tell us, you know. So, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, I mean, frankly, I get a bit bored of it, but I feel, you know, sort of duty bound to keep illustrating this stuff when it's brought to my attention, and just sort of so that people have got some kind of reference to go to, you know, to try and pick it apart, you know. And it's not my goal to sort of knock these people down, and I try and show why it's important to keep your guard up, you know, and stuff. But
Well, I think you're very tactful, and you make wonderful points. And it all gets back to the fact that if people read her book and really, really study it, I mean, it's not a quick read, but just looking at the pictures, looking at stuff disappearing in midair as it's falling, I mean, you cannot argue with facts, you cannot argue with the photos. I mean,
Right.
that is what your eyes see. And it's basically what these people are trying to say is, don't believe your lying eyes, believe what we're telling you.
Right, and you bring up an interesting statement there, because he says you can't argue with the photos. Well, that brings me to another comment that this friend who wrote to me drew my attention to, which is on his website, easily missed actually. And this is on his website, on Steve Diak's website. He says, "What was shown on 9/11 is physically impossible in the real world. Therefore, the only conclusion is that the videos of the plane impacts are fraudulent," which is very interesting, because that's actually not the only conclusion. Because if you, one thing we perhaps haven't spoken about is my friend Richard D. Hall's analysis, because earlier this year he published a new analysis. And God knows how he did this. It's amazing. I mean, I know Richard very well. I've spent a lot of time with him. And I actually do know how he did it, because he told me and he gave me all the files to do it. But he took probably 6 months to do this. What Richard D. Hall did, he has an engineering background not too dissimilar to mine, actually. And decided he was going to look at this plane issue more carefully. And what he decided to do was he got all the video clips of the supposed second plane crash. And I think there are about 56 of them altogether. I thought there were only about 42, but apparently there are more. There's about 56. He got them all and he edited them all into these short clips. And then he went onto Google SketchUp, which is a program you can download. And that's a 3D modeling package. It's free. And he then plotted where these videos were taken from, and he mapped the footage onto the 3D model, and he matched that up with the disclosed radar data of Flight 175, which he'd also got from a report by Daniel R. Boer. So in other words, what he did was he matched up the official radar trace with all these 56 video clips.
Oh my gosh. Now he did he's got a YouTube of this, right?
Correct. Yep, correct. And it's on, somebody's put it onto YouTube, but Richard doesn't use YouTube that much.
Okay.
Somebody's put it onto YouTube. And if you go onto richplanet.net /911.php, or just put Richard Hall 3D analysis or something into Google, you'll get this up. And he's done a wonderful job, because what he actually proved is that the radar data and all the video clips match very, very closely, very closely. And I found that very, very interesting, because from from Dr. Judy Wood's research and my own sort of bits and pieces that I'd looked at, we were getting the feeling that all this talk of video fakery, don't get me wrong, I do think there was some video fakery. I've never been quite sure how much, but all this talk of video fakery was a cover for something else. And I think it's a cover for another type of technology. Now, I'll give it the name image projection. And when you think about image projection, some people would call it hologram technology, which it may have been something along those lines too. Mm-hmm. We don't know the exact technology. But what is interesting is that, people that have been trying to sort of talk about this, and this happened to David Shaler, who was a former MI5 officer. He was talking about holograms and planes, and in 2006, and not that long thereafter, something happened to David Shaler, and he then claimed to be the new Messiah, and then he was quickly bundled off all the previous stages.
Now wasn't his wife also part of their team, his team?
Well, it wasn't his wife. His partner at the time was called Annie Machon, and yes, I could tell you more about that, because they actually both stayed at my house. But what I have to say is, without going into the details, I my own understanding on this is that Annie Machon does not have an innocent role in this. I think she's somehow involved, and I don't know exactly how, but from her reaction to what I was trying to do and what I was trying to present, I could see that she wasn't being totally honest with me, and perhaps I'll leave it at that for now. But David Shaler, in other words, going back to him, was talking about holograms as early as 2006. Now, I still don't know whether it was holograms, but what I will say is that if you look at Richard's film, it's a very, very good analysis, very thorough, and he shows that, curiously, all these 56 clips match up with very closely match with the radar data. Now, what was interesting is that a few months prior to this, you may be familiar with a film called September Clues.
Yes.
And I've given out many copies of that film on DVD, but some red flags were raised for me, because it began to interact two or three years ago with the creator of that film, whose name is Simon Shack, originally didn't give his name. And he then gave the name of Simon Shack, but his real name is actually Simon Hitton, or Hyten, and he's of Norwegian descent. Now, I originally gave him some web space, because he appealed for that on a forum to store his video clips. And I gave him that web space in, I think, 2009, No, 2008 it was. I've got the date here because I've written all this up now. And I've had to write all this up because what actually happened with Simon Shaq is, again, ultimately, without going through the whole story, he turned around and he started attacking Judy Wood. And what he said is, on his forum, because he again set up his own forum, "I see that Judy Wood has published a new book. However, her research is based on fake pictures. The sole purpose of her existence is, in my humble opinion, to provide a plausible explanation for the very stupid-looking WTC pulverization animations." And that's the way that he's described it on his forum. And let's see. I interacted with him through Skype, and I've published some of these communications, which he wasn't very happy about, but I felt that I had to do it. Because you can clearly see that he's up to something. In other words, he's been disingenuous. And he later, I don't think I put the quote on the article, but I put it later, because he later claimed on his forum, oh, and in fact, yes, he wrote to me, "I and no one else will ever be able to prove exactly how the WTC complex was demolished. Do you understand? That's why Richard Gage concentrates on his unprovable matter." Well, I didn't even mention Richard Gage to him, and I know that what Richard Gage has said is unprovable because I know that it's false. That's been established. So he said that. And then he said on his forum, I'll just try and get the quote because it's worth me getting it. Let's just, I discovered this posting on his forum. This was another thing, because Simon Shaq never had a forum originally. He never had an internet forum, and it was set up when a couple of the other forums closed down. And another of the YouTube comments from Steve Diak, the guy who's done the 9/11 crash test, and I'm jumping around a bit here, because he made on one of his YouTube comments, "I'm perfectly willing to discuss this." In fact, let me just get that specific quote as well, so I don't mess it up. Where am I going? Need to go back to that. Need this open in another window, really. Right. Let me just get that quote about the Steve Diak, because... okay. "Once I get a crash test site forum up, we can discuss it." So in other words, somebody had made a comment on his YouTube channel, and then he was encouraging them to come onto the site forum. Now, the point about that is that the YouTube comments are more open than a forum. You know, you've got less control over them. You can obviously still delete them and stuff, but... You know, if you've got your own forum, you can control exactly what gets on and gets off there, you know. And so this person who wrote this this email to me wondered if that was the reason. So let me get the comment from Simon Shaq that he recently posted, because it's quite revealing. Somebody had posted remarks about Dr. Wood's research on Simon Shaq's forum, he responded... I'll stop here for now. Please reply to this post of mine before you spam any other links to Judy Wood's blatant disinformation bullcrap. So, pardon the language, but that's his language.
Oh my!
On this forum, thanks. And this is the guy who spent months and months making a film called September Clues. You know, and it's a very good film, very well made, very well produced, and he highlights some significant anomalies. And I still think that, despite, you know, what I've just been pointing out here. But what I'm trying to bring out in these two comparisons that I'm trying to make, or a comparison between these two things, is we have Steve Diak specifically focused on the crash issue, and then he's disrespectful to the other research. He doesn't just say, for example, "Well, I've looked at that, and I don't really want to discuss that here, but if, you know, I'll discuss it later." Or he says, "Well, I want to make this the focus," or "I haven't looked into it." He ends up essentially being disparaging about it and being rude about it, or saying it's unimportant, or whatever. And this is the theme that we seem to have, these little, you know, and it's very much now the feeling that I've got from this 9/11 crash test, as if this is the new architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, let's get behind this cause. This is the cause. We want to get this crash test done. You know, we're going to get some money together, and then we're going to do this test, and then everything will be fine. Same with architects and engineers. You know, we'll get some people down on the petition. We'll do some public presentations. We'll get a new inquiry going, and everything will be fine. And you know, this theme has emerged and re-emerged over the last few years. And I think it's important on this anniversary that we remain vigilant, that we need to focus on initially on what actually happened and getting a clear picture of that. And that is now, that job is essentially now being done and has been done with the publication of the book, Where Did the Towers Go? And also, you know, we've tried, a lot of people have criticized it, saying, oh, you know, it's too expensive and it's too complicated and all these other sorts of criticisms. But I certainly have tried to, you know, if people write to me, they come to my website and they want DVDs, I'll send them DVDs for free. I've given out lots of free DVDs. I've sent them to the US. I've sent them to other countries. So if anybody listening to this is still thinking, oh, come on, Johnson, you know, put your money where your mouth is. Well, I have, frankly. And if you want copies of these DVDs, I'll send you them for free. You know,
right. And you've made that offer numerous times.
Right, right. So, you know, it's and the whole point is to give the other thing that comes out, really, I suppose, is that you can't force this information on people. I found that it just doesn't really work. You've got to wait until they become curious and that they, you know, they invite you in essence into their thinking in some way, and that they say, well, hang on, you said something and I've become a bit more interested in that now for whatever reason, you know. And then I'll say, yeah, well, look, you know, here's some DVDs. If you, when you get time, have a look at them, and it may answer some of your questions, you know. And that's essentially what I've been trying to do over the last sort of few years, really.
Right. And yet there is always something that brings people's attention back to the so-called official version, which is the kind of stuff that Richard Gage promotes. And I have always felt that there was a movement already in place before the event actually happened to answer the skeptics who would eventually come around to start asking questions, that this movement was already in place with a cover story. And now you have, what's this latest, the PBS,
yes.
One of the PBS channels, is showing this film, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, and this is on a PBS station, and people are saying, wow, the truth is finally getting out, and isn't this wonderful? No, it isn't.
I'm glad you brought that up, because a couple of people have written to me about that as well, and, you know, there are even people that we know quite well who seem to be sort of cheering that this has come out. But this shows you how sophisticated the psychology is. Because as you say, you know, the truth isn't coming out. What you've got is a different lie. You know, maybe there's a little bit more truth in it, in certain small parts of it. But, the whole title there, explosive evidence.
Right.
Well, we're not dealing with an explosion, certainly not as regards the towers go. They didn't explode. So, you know, you've got that, again, if you simply look at the title and look at the psychology and the choice of words, explosive evidence, well, I'm sorry, but it's not, you know, if the title was, 9/11 pulverization or something like that, or dustification, then we'd know we were dealing with something perhaps a little bit closer to what actually happened to the towers.
Right.
And this, the chap who, going back to very briefly to the 9/11 crash test article, he specifically pointed out the use of a tiered cover-up, you know, that it's not just one cover-up. We've got layers of them. We've got different sort of alleyways that have been set up, as you sort of implied, before the event. You know, they've clearly planned this. And, for example, Stephen E. Jones must have been given some script, and he seemed to have been kind of launched into the story in a specific point in the development of the cover-up, and that was in 2005 when these technical reports came out. And I strongly feel that he was put there then to soak up some of the inquiring minds, which would be kind of partly woken up by what was in those reports. Now, I can't prove that. That's my own speculation. But looking at the timing and what his role then went on to be, I suspect, that's what the plan was at the time. So we're getting all this psychology. I suppose we're a little bit further along in that they've got to produce something on PBS, which is not just a regurgitation of the official story. They've got to change it slightly. But again, as we say, replacing one lie with another doesn't really get you that much further down the line. And, you know, it's arguably even worse because you've got, you know, people are more convinced they're getting the truth and actually they're not.
Right.
And they don't realize it.
Right.
You know, so.
And of course, it is on PBS, and PBS is funded by the government by about 15% of its money. And the previous president of PBS was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah.
The current president, Paul A. Kerger, K-E-R-G-E-R, makes $632,233 a year as an annual compensation. And I just, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is a government operation.
Yeah, I mean, it looks that way, doesn't it? You know, and I remember, I don't know if Dr. Judy's spoken about this on your program, but we have discussed, for example, the role of David Ray Griffin. And I bring him up because in his book, The New Pearl Harbor, which, you know, you mentioned that title earlier on, and Dr. Wood, she did this presentation in 2007 called The New Hiroshima, because she essentially pointed out that this was a new weapon, or at least new to us. Just as the atomic bomb was in 1945, no one had ever seen an atomic bomb in 1945. So that was a new weapon, and she pointed out that this was too. But going back to David Ray Griffin, and he wrote this book called The New Pearl Harbor, and the first edition of that book had a foreword by a certain Richard Falk, F-A-L-K, and he wasn't the brother of Columbo, I don't think. he was. He was also a member of the CFR. So how come a member? So how come a member of the CFR is writing the foreword to David Ray Griffin's book? Isn't that some kind of endorsement?
Indeed.
So, you know, and as another chap, Robert Singer, pointed out to me, he made a very good point. Well, how is it that David Ray Griffin can get about six or seven of his 9/11 books saying that Bush did 9/11? I know he didn't specifically say that, but he strongly implied that in at least one of the books that he wrote. How can he get all those books into Barnes and Noble and Amazon, you know, all these shelves and everywhere, and Amazon and everywhere? I mean, I know Dr. Wood's books on Amazon, but it is self-published. It's not gone through Barnes and Noble or anything.
Right.
But how can David Ray Griffin get all those books? And I think him particularly, he's probably written the most books about 9/11 of any authors and got the widest exposure in the literary world, I think.
Right, because publishing is very controlled. I mean,
yes.
I've published books also and recognize that, well, they just don't want to publish certain things that might be more true than what they think the public wants. So,
right. One thing I will say about publishing, though, I mean, I've self-published this 9/11 Finding the Truth, but what I found particularly interesting is that the use of the Kindle platform, because what I found is, and this, you know, I should have done this sooner actually, but for people that are doing any sort of self-publishing, and if they're not, you know, if they're like me and they're just wanting to get information out into the public domain, obviously Amazon is probably, I would guess it's one of the top 10 websites on the internet. I would have thought Amazon must be.
I'm sure.
So if you can get information distributed for free on Amazon, I mean, that's a pretty good thing to have access to. And that's what I did, because I made a Kindle version of my book. And it's actually fairly straightforward. You can download free software, you know, so you can start with a Microsoft Word document or something similar to that. There are other word processors than Microsoft, you know, I should say that, shouldn't I?
Right.
But yeah, you know, you can start off with that, and then you can convert it to Kindle format quite quickly, and you can put it onto Amazon. And what I did was I put it on for 99 cents, because that was the lowest price I could set. And I've had thousands of downloads altogether thousands. I don't know how many people have downloaded it, but it gives you, once you put it onto the Amazon Kindle store, it gives you a number of copies downloaded. And then what I did was, once I'd created the file for the Kindle, it's called a Mobi file, M-O-B-I, I just put that onto my website as a free download link, and you can just save it onto your Kindle, and it opens up as a Kindle book, just as if you'd bought it. And I never knew any of this. I just sort of played around with it. You know, I just sort of experimented with it. And then I went back onto the Amazon site a few weeks later, and they said price match, free. And they'd reduced the cost to zero. So I've now got Amazon Kindle Store distributing my book to hundreds of thousands of people for free.
I was absolutely
over the moon. And they haven't censored it, at least not yet, you know, and there's a few reviews have been posted on there. There's one guy who came onto the review and he put, this is boring, free is too much. You know, I mean, what can you say to that? You know, you just have to laugh. Well, why did you read it? You know, why the heck did you read it?
Indeed.
You know, it's just unbelievable. But this is what people are like. So, you know, that in of itself is an education. But I would recommend that if anybody wants to do it, there's some YouTube tutorials of how to create a Kindle book. If people are just wanting to get a Kindle book out there, lots of people have got them now, and they've produced some new Kindles now. And you can run the Kindle application on one of these smartphones now, on the Android platform and stuff, and the iPhone. You can, you know, so you've got, you can get your information into people's pockets, and, you know, and they can read it when they're on the train or the bus or whatever, and the plane. And it's a fantastic free way to just get that information out to people, you know, and I hope that people will capitalize on that.
Right. And of course, you can use Kindle on your computer. You don't even have to have a Kindle.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, so the thing about Kindle on the computer is it's obviously good as well. But, you know, you can have PDF, which is easier to create. It's easier because there are a few steps to create a Kindle file. It's not that difficult. But with a PDF, you can normally do it very, very easily for a computer. But the Kindle format is pretty good because all the text will reflow and, you know, and this sort of thing. And it's very good.
Well, that's great. Have you ever done anything or evaluated Leslie Rafael's work on the Nade Brothers film?
Oh, is that about where the film was taken?
Right, yes.
I couldn't remember the name. I've seen a very... detailed look at that, and if that's his name, yes, I have looked at it. It's a few years since I looked at it, and yes, very intriguing.
And I hosted his article. The last update that he did that I'm aware of is July of 2007, but he started working on this. The first draft was September 2002. Now, he lives in Scotland, and I mean, he really worked so hard on this. I mean, he got all of these facts and figures, and he did an excellent job. Really amazing.
He did. If I remember the article, he did it, and it went on for pages.
Oh, yes.
And he had all these maps and measurements and so on.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so I must revisit that, actually, because I think, certainly, it's funny you should mention that, because literally today, I was thinking, oh, that's great. Literally today, I was thinking how this would probably tie in quite nicely with what Richard Hall had done, because, you know, he used some of the Nade footage as part of his film too, and pointed out certain details about it. I could probably make another little video as well, because there's another couple of factors talking about the planes for a minute. Somebody sent me a clip by Dick Oliver, he was one of the local New York stations. He was on one of the local New York stations, and they were doing an interview with somebody on the street near the World Trade Center around the time of, I think it was the first plane, supposed plane going there. And they were just doing a street interview, you know, nothing to do with 9/11, just talking to some Pete, what they were, you know, shopping for or something. And then this event happened, and they what happened if you watch the footage, they've put the temporarily put the camera down on the pavement while they're setting up a tripod or, you know, setting up the microphones or something, and you hear this sort of, you know, sort of muted rumble, and at the precise moment that you hear this, they're quite close to the World Trade Center, there's a glitch on the camera. You see, like, the videos go slightly out of sync, and then it goes back to normal. And I would contend that what we've seen in that clip is an impulse, some type of energy impulse, which has affected the recording, because we've seen from Dr. Wood's data from the magnetometer, we've got this dip in the Earth's magnetic field, and the low point, the minimum of the dip, is precisely at 8:46 when this supposed first plane went in. And that seems to correspond pretty also precisely with this glitch on the video of the Dick Oliver clip. And so, you know, these would make some interesting additions and points of evidence to, as well as, you know, the what's his name again, Leslie?
Leslie Rafael.
It would make, you know, I think I should maybe bring these things together in a video because they're somewhat lesser known, you know, not right. Talked about as much. So, yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, I sent you a link to it.
Yeah, that's great. I'll get that up and I think I'll revisit that. Oh, yes, this was the one.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, oh, wow, yeah, six appendices. Yeah, so great.
So.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, anyway, it's been nice chatting with you, as always.
And you.
It is amazing that they just won't go away. They won't leave her alone. They will just keep after her. And as you mentioned before with Fetzer, I mean, she's not doing any fighting. It takes two people to fight, and yet he's got he and his minions apparently have to handle the whole thing because she just doesn't respond.
That's right. You know, I think, you know, we do observe what's going on and everything, but we don't get involved. We don't. I don't. What's the point? You know, it's not my nature. Yeah,
what's
not my nature. It's insignificant when you compare this to what actually happened.
Right.
You know, and this is so vast and so important. And as I say to people, I think we did read this out before, you know, that if Dr. Wood was successful in, you know, educating the public about what happened, it would be the end of the ruling elite. And it would.
It would.
Because it would, at so many levels, you know, people would be liberated from these sort of mechanisms under which, you know, they are used to control them.
Sure. And, like energy and free electricity and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. And the climate, you know, I point out the one that's often forgotten, the climate change scam, because if you look at the Hurricane Erin data, you can, you know, I know it's controversial to say it, but to me, that hurricane was put there.
Of course it was.
Yeah, if they can steer hurricanes. Yep. So that's all that, you know, scam blown out of the water. So it's a complete game changer on so many levels. And I think, as I've said before.
Yep. I lost you. Are you there? Whoops. Okay, we've had an internet connection situation. Bye.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I just told everybody goodbye, but.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can. You can edit that a bit if you want, or I've recorded it at this end.
Okay.
Yeah. So, if you want, I can edit this and you know, edit that bit out or whatever.
Okay. It wasn't bad. I just said, well, you're offline. Something happened.
All right.
So okay. I think it'll be all right. I think
right.
Sometimes people really don't want people like you talking about things like this, and they don't. You know, there's more than one way to silence people.
Well, this is true. This is true. We've spoken about this other times. But
sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's been lovely talking with you.
And you, Deanna, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
All righty. Take care.
Yeah. Take care now. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.